June shows coming up. Hollywood, June 4th, I'm at the Troubadour. It's going to be a really cool show. June 24th, I'm in Des Moines, Iowa, one night only. June 25th, headed to Omaha, Nebraska, one night only. And back at Brea, California, June 30th, one night only as well. Get your tickets to those shows and all shows at RyanSickler.com.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Nightpan Studios. I am Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. I want to thank you guys. I want to thank you for continuing to support this channel and this show. And also want to thank everyone that's come out to see me on tour so far. All right. Nightpants Nation tour is on its way. Get tickets for all shows at RyanSickler.com. Des Moines, I will be there June 24th, one night only, and Omaha, June 25th, one night only, all right? Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube. If you gotta have more Honeydew, then you gotta hear the Patreon. I am telling you, that community is growing every month. Not one time have we had less people. Once you hear it, you're in, all right? It's the Honeydew with y'all, and I'm highlighting the lowlights with y'all. And I promise, y'all got some fucking lowlights out there. And we have hundreds of emails. Still, we could do this show for years. I'm telling you, submit, because we're looking for the best stuff out there. All right. Submit your story. If you have one that has to be heard, honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. All right. You don't need to be a Patreon to do the show. All right. But if you want to be a Patreon, it's $5 a month. If you sign up for a year, you get over a month free. All right. And you're getting the Honeydew a day early ad free at no additional cost. That's it. There's no tiers, no any of that stuff. It's $5. And do yourself a favor, sign up for a year. It's for like $4 or something like that. All right. Now, you guys know what we do over here. We highlight the lowlights. These are the stories behind the storytellers. Today, very excited to have here, first time on the do, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Pauly Shore. Welcome to the Honeydew, Pauly Shore.
I don't know if I'm going to do this now. I just realized what this fucking podcast is. So I'm supposed to talk about my lows?
Yeah, in a high way.
Oh, man.
You ready to get up about your lows?
Am I up on the mic real good?
All right, well, before we get into what we're going to talk about today, plug everything and anything you would like.
Okay, I'm in the new Pinocchio movie. I played the voice of Pinocchio that just came out with Lionsgate, and which was cool. So I'm in that. And then also a new animated film called My Sweet Monster, and I play the villain in that. And then I have a one-man show about my childhood called Stick with the Dancing. So we want to promote that. And then all my stuff online, I'm really excited about. You know, all the stuff on YouTube. I have a band in Vegas that I fuck with. And I don't know. Wise Guys Downtown Arts District. You know, it's a club that I helped kind of open for Keith from Utah that's doing really well. And it's a great fucking room for the comics. You know, so every comic that plays there really. And Tony loved it. And Annie loved it. And everyone. Josh Wolf is there. And so that's that. And then what else? What other stuff? I don't know. You know, I'm back and forth from here in Vegas. And then the Comedy Store 50th anniversary. Very respect my parents. My dad started it, and then my mom ran it, and now my brothers are running it. So,
Look, let's just go there, because let's start at the beginning. Because you said you have a one man show about your childhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're doing a one man show, you obviously have a lot to say about it. But well, let me say this to you before we begin anything. I want to say, like, I watched your Rogan interview. I watch a lot of your shit, dude. I go back. I think we're probably close, similar in age. I'm 49.
49, 54, yeah.
There you go. So yeah. I remember all the MTV stuff.
But you have kids, right?
I have a daughter and a stepson.
Beautiful.
7 and 18.
Beautiful.
He's about to
see, I don't have a baby.
None?
No. That's a whole other. I did have an abortion once, but I didn't put that on the pamphlet for you guys to talk about.
So
you guys can, you guys can talk about, you guys can talk about that shit. That was fucking gnarly, dude.
Whew. You want to talk about it?
I guess, but we'll go wherever you want
to
go.
All right, we'll come back to children. But I want to give you your credit, because going back to MTV and then being a movie star, a lady I always talk about her, Sam, Miss Sandy, she was my mom growing up. My mom had,
who was?
My mom left the family. Her name is Sandy Patterson.
Okay.
And her daughter was like a sister to me. Her son, Shannon, we're still all very, very, very tight.
And this is back childhood. In Baltimore?
Mm-hmm.
Copy.
And her daughter was killed in a car accident.
Oh, man.
And it just brought us all together in a weird, sad way as well. 16. Yeah. And your movie Son-in-Law comes out. And she was just going through it. And there's a bunch of us kids are staying at her house for a little while and stuff. And I'm in the basement and I'm watching Son-in-Law. And she comes down and she sits there and she's like, what do you watch? I'm like, this is Pauly Shore's Son-in-Law. And I'm telling you, she sat and watched the whole movie.
Wow.
It became this little connection for us. And when I called her right away when you were official, I called her. I was like, guess who's coming on the podcast?
Wow.
So she's all stoked.
What's her name?
Sandy Patterson.
Sandy, what's up? It's Pauly Shore. I know that you've probably been through some crazy shit, but the good thing is we all have, and we're all going through crazy shit. So I love you, and thank you for liking my movie Son-in-Law.
Fuck yeah.
And check out Pinocchio, bro.
She's got the granddaughter.
Yassification. There you go.
There you go.
So thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I get that. You know, it's amazing because I still pinch myself. You know, I still pinch myself. I go on tour and I pinch myself when people come up and they're crying and they say, oh, this movie saved me. And my friend was dying of cancer and my dad watched this movie and he died right after he saw it. No, I'm just kidding. And he saw Bio and was like, that was the last thing. He died. He killed himself. No, it's interesting because the movies came out and I was so popular at the time that, you know, when you're spinning and you're so popular, it's going to crash at some point. You can't sustain,
yes.
You know, I was doing all this
forever.
I was doing all this shit. But the good part is whether the critics like the movies or not, 20, 30 years later, they're actually more strong now than they were back then. I know this because I sell tickets, you know, on the road.
Amen.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
And I don't sell tickets. I don't sell tickets because of my Netflix special. I don't sell tickets because of my YouTube channel. I sell tickets because, you know, my films, and then, you know, they start to see my other stuff. But that's how special those movies were that I did. And it just makes me feel really good that I was able to do those films and make people feel really good, you know?
Well,
and it's beautiful, you know, it's a beautiful thing, you know?
And so is the fact that you're alive.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're 54.
Yes.
And in this business,
yeah,
especially, you see so many people come and literally go if you're fortunate enough to still be around.
I'm doing the beat show. You do the honeydew, I got the beats. The beat show. It's the honeydew and meet the beats. The beats meet the honeydew. And
honeydew
then the
beats?
Ginger. No, I just mix that shit up. No, I live in Vegas, so it's like there's not a lot of juice out there. So I come here to LA and I go to the juicery on Santa Monica Boulevard where they just have all the juices. Just drink these juices. So, yeah, I like to drink the juices, mix it up.
So let's go back to the beginning with the Comedy Store and your mom. And I don't know how sick you are of talking about it, but I want to know because I want to know your point of view. You're talking about this one-man show from your childhood.
Yeah.
Talk to me about it.
Where
does the one-man show begin?
The one-man show, there's not a lot of sadness in it. It's what happens.
Well, I'll dig that out.
There's sadness. There's sad. It's mostly like how, because a lot of people, the people that do know me, they know me from the MTV and the movies and the stand up and all that shit. And the people that don't know me, they don't know that my mom and my dad started the store and that I grew up around there. So the one man show is basically saying, yo, you guys know this shit, but what you don't know is this shit. So it's basically me kind of unveiling all the questions that everyone wants to know. What was it like having Richard Pryor there? What was it like Robin Williams there? What was your first time you meet Kennison?
What's your first memory of all of it? That's what I want to start at the beginning. Like, what do you first remember? How old are you? And what are your first remember at the Comedy Store?
It was just rock and roll. You know, my mom was cool. My dad was cool when they first started it. Me and my brothers would fucking run around. My sister was wild as fuck. You know, my sister, a lot of people don't know that I had a sister. She passed away about 3 years ago, which was fucked up. Yeah, Sandy. And she was so special, you know. and she was wild, and she dropped acid, and she used to go out with a guy named Filthy McNasty. Years ago, the Viper Room on Sunset.
I remember the Viper Room.
Yeah, but years before that was Filthy McNasty's.
Oh, that's what it was.
And so he used to pick her up in his fucking hearse with flames on it. And this was like his fucking, his car, and he would honk the horn, and it would sound like an ice cream truck. You know, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I'd scream, Sandy, Filthy's here. You know what I mean? And this was my life. And my parents divorced when I was three. So my mom was busy at the store. My dad was on the road with Elvis and doing whatever he was
doing. Elvis, really?
Yeah, my dad opened for Elvis for 10 years, yeah.
No shit. I see. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And my dad
opened for— Did you ever meet Elvis?
Yeah, I did.
You did?
Yeah,
you—
Yeah, smell
Elvis.
My finger. Here, the king. The king.
I can smell from
the
here.
Fucking king,
peanut,
man.
Peanut butter
the fucking
and pussy.
King. Yeah, peanut butter. And, no, so my dad also remarried to a woman named Stephanie. Stephanie was related to Melissa Gilbert. So for a short time, I was related to Melissa Gilbert. So as a kid,
that's—
I would
Little
go,
House on the Prairie.
Yeah, Little
right?
House on the Prairie. As a kid, my dad would take me to the set of Little House on the Prairie.
Really?
Yeah.
Where is that?
I think it was at Radisson Studio or some shit back in the day when they used to have sets and stuff like that. But yeah, it was,
And how old are you when you're— this Comedy Store stuff's
I
popping
was four.
Off?
I
four.
Was 4 years old,
You started
old,
at four in there?
Well, my parents opened it in 72, so, I was four. Yeah, I was four. And then, I'm the youngest of four as well. So I have Peter, and then there's Sandy, and then Scott. So, and it's weird because they're all from the same mom and same dad. Yet me and Scott, my oldest brother, are 15 years apart. But
oh,
yet
wow.
my parents,
really?
My parents didn't like each other, which is fucking weird because they didn't like each other, yet they kept having kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you don't get abortions back then. You just don't, you know? And, but yeah, it was, you know, my mom was cool. You know, she was cool. You know, she loved her comedians. And, but she was also a good mom. She wasn't like, she didn't neglect me. She always made sure the comedians took care of me. Like, I got a nice email from Lois Bromfield, who is a very funny female lesbian comedian that actually raised me, telling, hey, you know, hey, great, you know, great for the store and congratulations and stuff. But yeah, she just, you know, I was like a hot potato. You know what I mean? I was just kind of given, you know, binder to every single one of them, took care of Argus. You know, dated my mom. I mean, he was fucking gnarly, dude, back in the day. Argus was really gnarly. You know, like coke, drinking, like abusive.
And I mean, seeing all this.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, my mom picked really bad guys. You know, but my mom believed in Argus. You know what I mean? She thought he was going to be the next, but he was, you know, he's a cokehead. You know, and it was sad to see him, but he was like a violent cokehead, you know? It was really, whatever you think, it was 10 times worse. It was gnarly. Yeah, it was fucking gnarly. And then, you know, the Kennison and Dice feud was a little gnarly as well, because I love Dice and I love Sam, and I was kind of in the middle of that shit. And, you know, it was a different time back then. You know, now it's like, you know, you mind your P's and Q's, you know, wherever you go. And back then, you know, life was just like whatever you say you did. And it's just the way of the world. Yeah.
How old were you when you first tried drugs?
I wasn't a druggie.
Never?
No.
Even
I mean,
being
I did blow once in a while, but it was always like once in a while. You know, it was like the Beverly Hills High School prom. You know, I went to the prom at Beverly Hills High School. It's hilarious because it was my friend Peter Bill drove my mom's limo. Peter Bill is the son of Tony Bill, the director that did all the fucking— I don't know. You have your girl. What's your girl's name?
Kirsten.
Google Tony Bill. He's a big director back in the day. Like all these. So he was his son. Was my limo driver for the prom, and in my mom's limo. So this is the limo that all the comedians, you know, the comedians would drive my— like Freddie Soto would drive my mom around it and all that stuff. And my mom was hilarious. So she like, take the limo to your prom. Just have it home by tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
So fucking. So we went to the prom at the Hilton in Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as the food part, you know, that was the beginning. And then there was the after prom, you know, the after thing.
Yeah.
So the food part, everyone was coked out. You know, so you got all these Beverly Hills kids and all these stuffed chickens with pilaf and rice, and no one's eating shit. And everyone's just like, you know what I mean? So that was like a big deal. It was, you know, Beverly Hills in the 80s. It was like, you know, that it was.
So you're
that,
born and raised West Hollywood.
Born and raised in West Hollywood.
I mean, yeah. Man, that's yeah. There's not many of you out there, I feel like.
Yeah, me and Josh Richman, that's about it. Josh Richman was a really, really good friend of mine when we started together acting. He was best friends with Keanu Reeves and a lot of locals from LA know Josh Richman. It was just kind of us.
So what was your, what before MTV, what really, you know, boosted you up? Was it just performing at the store? What catapulted you and got you in front of that audience?
It was just my determination.
I mean, were you auditioning? Was that something you auditioned for?
What happened was is I always knew I was going to do stand-up. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, you know, at a young age, like little. I just kind of like was obsessed with my dad and my mom and the store and making, you know what I mean? But I wanted to live my childhood. You know, I wanted to surf. I wanted to skateboard. I wanted to, you know, I was a mod for a while. Do you know what a mod is? Mm-hmm. It's basically that shit that started in London with the mud flaps. And, you know, it's like I spoke like it with an English accent for a while.
Okay.
You know, so they're like, mate, we're the fucking mods. We are the mods. We are the mods. We are the mods. And we would do our scooters. So I wanted to be a kid. So the beginning of 12th grade is when I started to take it serious. So everything I did in my life, I always took serious, believe it or not. A lot of people might think like, oh, Pauly Shore's fucked up, but there was always like kind of a plan in place. So
18.
I was 17.
Senior in high school, 17. 17, okay, the beginning. That's young, yeah.
Yeah, so that's when I decided, I go, I'm going to fucking start. So I started doing stand-up and just working everywhere but the store. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Argus wrote some jokes for me. Angel Salazar wrote jokes. I think Jack Perdue, who took care of me, he would write some jokes for me. Ollie Joe Prater. I don't know. Just different comics would help me with my jokes. But I stayed away from the store. Yeah.
And then MTV hits and boom. That's yeah, where it starts well, it
was,
at all.
Yeah. It was basically, I was doing a movie called Phantom of the Mall in 1988. And my manager got a call and they said, MTV has heard about you. There was like a buzz in the town about me. So they came to see me at the store and that went well. And then I think a couple months after that, they flew me to spring break for MTV. But that didn't go good.
It did.
No.
I mean, how could it? I feel like
it
that's
was
just a
fucking
shit show.
Mess, dude. Yeah. I mean, I pretty much got sent home. It was like, because I was nervous and I didn't really know where I fit in and I was just kind of there. So
once all that starts, then I've always seen you rolling with beautiful women. Mm. When does all that begin? Because you brought up Savannah on your email, and I forgot about Savannah until you said that. And I was like, yeah, this woman was one of the, not just a porn star, she's one of the most popular figures at the time.
Yeah.
For sure. Everyone knew who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And when does all that start for you?
It was kind of a whirlwind, you know? It was right after the MTV stuff. It was around that time. You know, I was hot off of MTV. And then, you know, and that's kind of like how it all happened.
And you met her where?
I met her at the Comedy Store. I was at the Porn Awards, and I met this guy, Sean, a.k.a. Edward Penis Hands. He had a, you know, back in the day, it was his hands and every finger had a dildo
and it would come all
over.
Yeah,
and he'd be like,
yeah,
and he would like fuck girls with this. I'm like, so I was like, dude, you're Edward Penis Hands, you know? Like, yeah, man, what's up? So we switched numbers back in the day, and then he came to the Comedy Store. My mom threw me I used to do a club there called Club Wheeze, and it was just like, you know, Peter Bill was there, my friend, and different, you know, my brothers were there, and it was just like different friends. We would, you know, fuck around at the store like a DJ and stuff, and my mom kind of gave me a night, and he brought her to Club Wheeze, and then that night, you know, we hooked up, and it was pretty awesome. I just fell in love with her.
Yeah.
You know, she was adorable. She was like 21, and I was like 23, and she was just really cool and funny. She made me laugh, and my mom loved her. You know, she's just a really cool chick.
How long did you date?
Probably like 2 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, on and off for 2 years.
So you really did like her.
Yeah, because we got along, you know? She was a nice person. She made me laugh, you know? So, and she was cool, so.
And then she committed, was suicide? She committed suicide? What, do you know actually what happened? Are you comfortable talking about it?
Yeah. I put it in the pamphlet that we could talk about. It's the pamphlet.
I don't know how deep you want to get about it.
We'll go about 6 inches. And, no, it was just, it's a sad story. There's a lot of fucking sad Hollywood stories.
Were you still seeing her at the time that happened?
I was not.
You weren't?
No, we'd been friends. I had been friends because I had woken up one day and I was just like, why am I dating a porn star? You know what I mean? It doesn't really make sense. You know, like I'm, you know, she's cool, but then she's going to go fuck dudes on camera. And I was like, I can't do that. Plus there's AIDS and shit and all that other stuff and diseases. Yeah. AIDS, you know what I mean? So it's just like, it was just, I just kind of woke up, you know? Yeah. So, she was 23. That's young.
Man.
To kill herself. Yeah. And she just had a lot of, you know, things happening in her life. You know, she was sick of being, she was sick of being a porn star. She was sick of being known as Savannah. She had tax problems. She owed the money to the government. She was, you know, dancing. It was just like, is, you know, she was in a, it was like a, you know, you
spiral,
get, it was like a spiral thing. So she was, driving with my friend Jason and, they got in a car crash kind of, and she was able to kind of maneuver her car back to her house. And then he goes inside to get her like a rag or something cause she hit her head. And then when he comes back, she did it in the garage. Yeah, so that was that, yeah.
So he saw that then.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. Fuck.
Yeah, and that, you know, was fucked up because that's how I met him. I met him through Danny Boy from House of Pain. I think I was buying my Plymouth at a car show, a Pontiac. I got this beautiful 69 Roadrunner. And I met, you know, I known Danny Boy for a while from House of Pain. And then Jason I met, and he's like, yo, I was with Savannah and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's just kind of like, you hear, I mean, there's so many stories.
So many.
I mean, it just, you know.
But you were here for them. That's the thing. There's so many you hear about, but you're right here in West Hollywood. Mm-hmm. There's the suicide off the hotel next to the store. Mm-hmm. What was that comedian's name?
Yeah, Steve Lubitkin. Yeah.
Steve Lubitkin.
Yeah.
Is it really true he believed he could hit the store? People say that. I'm like, man, he had to be fucked up if he just even logistically looked between the two buildings.
He probably didn't get good spots.
You need a squirrel suit, that motherfucker.
He probably didn't get good spots, you know? God. It's like, fuck.
I'm not trying to make light of a suicide. I'm just making light of the distance between the two, if that was your point to hit. Oh, I heard, you're going to be the person to ask for this. I've heard a story for years. It's a Kinnison. It's one of those, you know, you don't know if it's true or not. But the story I've heard for years was your mom and Kinnison would butt heads for a little bit, and she would give him the late night spot. They called it the Kinnison spot. He'd go like 150 to 2 or some shit like that or whatever. This is what I'm hearing, okay? Uh-huh. And that Kinnison, they had butted heads, and she was like, you're never going to be huge or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then I don't know if they had an argument or something, but he took some kind of a billboard out across from the store. With,
oh, yeah.
Is there any truth to any of this? Do you really remember this? I don't know what it is. Him giving the finger and then the city made him take it down. But again, this, you know, it's like telephone over 20 years.
You know, what's interesting is you bringing that up. Actually, I forgot about that.
Is that real?
Yeah, he did some sort. Yeah, him and my mom. Yeah, they butted heads.
But even though they butted heads, your mom still let him work there.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. He would get banned and then unbanned.
Okay,
I mean that's kind of what the story is about.
All right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We've all been banned. You know what I mean? So that's just the way it is. So yeah, he did buy a billboard right across from the OR, but I don't think he was doing that. I don't know what I got to ask. That's a good question.
I want to know.
I got to ask his brother, Bill Kennison. After we get off, we could call Bill.
All right.
And then I'll tell him that I just did your show. So, but yeah, I do remember.
So there is truth. It may not be the middle finger, but there is truth that he took a billboard sending a message about something.
Yes.
No shit.
Yes. Yeah.
How about that? That's one I've heard for years, and it just remembered that. I'm like, I got to ask Paulie that one. All right, so everything, as you say, it doesn't last forever. You're on this trajectory. You're going up. What happens when – because I remember one of the best things I've seen is a Joan Rivers documentary. I don't know if you've seen that. It's so good. Mm. And they talk about her manager at the time had also managed Richard Pryor. Mm. And he's like, you know, listen, Richard, in year one, we're going to do this. We're going to get your stand-up going. Year two, maybe work on a little special, something. Three and four, we'll try to get you into some movies and stuff like that. And he said, Richard Pryor looked at him and goes, listen, man, that sounds great. But what the fuck are we going to do about Monday? You know what I mean? Like, I don't have time for this 5-year shit. Mm. And Joan talked about how for years she had it written in a day planner, and she just opens the book and it's just white pages for years. Mm. And then boom, E hits and the Oscars, and she goes back up. So she talks about that, you know, the ups rise and downs. And
Yeah.
So what is the beginning of the first hill down for you? And how are you handling that?
I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that I didn't feel joyful any. I didn't feel that joyful anymore.
What was the last thing you did that you remember?
I didn't know how to go from a boy to a man. Does that make sense?
It does. Yes.
Because I kind of went from a boy to a man at 30.
Okay.
You know, because I was a childlike guy, and then the weasel and all that shit was very, you know, to do. You know what I mean? It was just I was burnt out. I just felt like I had more dimensions in me than the, you know what I mean?
And you'd been at that point?
Yeah, so inside of me, this kind of like relatable guy. I just didn't feel the buh, 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 anymore. So, you know, I started to look different. I started to act different. I became very self-aware that things weren't happening. I got self-aware that my box office wasn't as good as it was. I got self-aware that the critics were saying what they were saying. And you kind of start believing it because the offers kind of dry up. You're like, well, maybe this fucking movie was terrible. And maybe, you know, you start to second guess yourself. And so I just took, I'm a very, very vulnerable, like heart type of person, like my mom. You know, I make a lot of my decisions based off of this and not this. You know what I mean? Which is exactly like my mom. I have my mom's heart, you know? And I didn't look at it as a business. You know, I took it personal. And so what happened was, is after my sitcom got canceled on Fox, I decided that it was time for me to kind of part ways with my agent and manager. I was with great agents and great management, but I was just like, I just needed a break. So then once I you know, broke up with them, and then I kind of took a break, and then I went to my attorney, Jake, and I said, well, now what? Now what do we do? And he said, you had a good run. Like, just chill. Like, just chill. Like, you had an awesome run. Like, no one does that. You know what I mean?
That's a good
point.
I'm
so fucking stupid that I should have just said, yeah, just fucking chill, dude. Like, dude, you rocked. Like, what I shouldn't have done is fired them and just chilled and just been like, yo, I'm just going to chill. You know what I mean? And, but I wanted to be alone because there was stuff that I wanted to do. And I also knew that if I wanted to do certain things, they probably wouldn't let me. Whatever it was, anything. You know, I'm an artist. Look at the internet now. You could do whatever the fuck you want.
Yep, you can.
And so I spit myself out, you know, to be alone purposely, kind of, so I can connect with people more. Because I felt like I was up here and I wasn't here. I wasn't connecting. So I kind of did that, you know, I did that. And it really, you know, it fucked with me. You know, I lost this joy. You know, I lost this... the fun thing that who Paulie Shore is, you know, joyful, loving, giving man, just someone who's crazy. So I believed in all that shit and I took it heavy. And then I hit bottom. Emotionally.
What's going on at the time? I just
felt dead. You know, I felt numb. You know, I felt, I don't know. I wasn't looking at life half full. You know, I was looking at all this, and it was
all...
Were
you staying away from the store? Were you withdrawing from everybody, or just sort of going through the motions?
No, I was just walking around with depression.
Yeah.
You know? And then I called a group therapy that I was involved with when I was a kid called LifeSpring. And I called them up, and they had another seminar. And then I enrolled in that, you know, kind of like AA, where you know, for depression or sadness. Mm-hmm. So I enrolled into that. And I got my joy back. You know, I was able to kind of let go of all the chatter and let go of all the shit that I created and just start over again. And then that's when I did Pauly Shore is Dead, you know? And that's when I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm going to make fun of that situation. So not only did he kind of go away, but now he's going to make fun of the fact that he went away. And to me, Pauly Shore is Dead is the best move I've ever done. I mean, I truly believe it. You know what I mean? I mean, Son-in-Law and Biodome are bigger movies, but if you watch Pauly Shore is Dead, you can see the pain in it, but you can also see the comedy in it. And that Pauly Shore is Dead to me was the first part of the second part of my career. But okay. Because I put myself out there, I was able to learn to produce and direct and act and edit and graphics and mix and do like all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I started doing this shit with Pauly Shore is Dead 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, HD, I shot HD and, you know, blah, 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 and, you know, and all that stuff. And I hired my cameraman, Brian, to shoot it, who shot my Totally Pauly show. So I felt comfortable with that guy and I directed it and I got, everyone showed up. You know, Sean Penn's in it, Whoopi Goldberg's in it, Ben Stiller's in it, Eminem, Britney Spears, Dr. Dre, you know, everyone got the joke.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like awesome. And it took me 5 years.
Did it? Five
yeah,
years?
Yeah, it took me 5 years. But to me, it's the best thing I've ever done because it's so fucking honest, but it's so fake at the same time. Because if you watch it, like Carrot Top moves into my house. You know what I mean? But it's all played real, like gritty and like docu-style. And it's like, people are like, fuck, I didn't know Carrot Top moved in your house. You know? And and then, you know, I started to kind of like just didn't take things so personal. You know, I was just kind of like, you know, if someone talks shit, like, okay, great. You know what I mean? Like, they talk shit. And, I haven't been as affected. And ever since then, it's been like this. You know what I mean? And, you know, when I do things and everyone listening that's in the business, just put your heart into it. And do the best you can and say goodbye to it and leave it. You know, and then
if it's like a shit you flush.
It's like Pinocchio, this, you know, coming out in the voice of Pinocchio. I did it and I moved on and then it went viral, you know, my voice and everyone's like, oh, Pinocchio. I'm like, all right. You know what I mean? And Lionsgate's all happy and I'm like, that's awesome. You know, and if it didn't, that'd be awesome too. You know? And that's what this business is. It's not about anything else but just putting your heart into...
That's what life is.
Yeah.
Do it because you love it.
But this business is my life.
And give it your best.
Yeah, this business is my life. This is why I continue to do it, you know?
What would you do if you didn't have high interest loans or credit card debt? Would you move to a new city? Would you start a family? Through Upstart, you can pay off your existing debt quickly with a personal loan so you can tackle your next big financial goals. Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 1 million people have used Upstart to get one fixed monthly payment with a clear payoff date. Upstart knows you're more than just your credit score, so rather than looking at your credit score alone, Upstart's model considers other factors like your income, your employment, and other information provided in your loan application to find you a smarter rate for your loan. You can check your rate without impacting your credit score in just 5 minutes for loans between $1,000 all the way up to $50,000. And you can even receive funds as fast as one business day after accepting your loan. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/honeydew. That's upstart.com/honeydew. Don't forget to use my URL to let them know I sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/honeydew. Whatever way you challenge yourself, there's no better way to do it than with a pair of Raycom wireless earbuds in your ears. Raycom wireless earbuds are the best way to bring audio with you because no matter how much you shake things up, literally, no matter how much you shake,
You know they won't fall out of your ears. Their everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. There's also awareness mode for when you need to listen to your surroundings, so you can take Raycons with you wherever you go. With optimized gel tips for the perfect in-ear fit, these earbuds are so comfortable and they will not budge. Trust me, flying with them, exercising with them, cleaning around the house with them, wearing them outside here at the studio, I'm telling you, they don't fall out. Raycons offer 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life, and they're priced just right. You get quality audio at half the price of other premium audio brands. It's no wonder Raycons Everyday Earbuds have over 48,000 five-star reviews. And listen, you know how long Raycons been sponsoring this show. If you're not getting them, they're not coming back. So clearly, people are buying them, and clearly, they're very happy with Raycons. Right now, Honeydew listeners can get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/honeydew. That's buyraycon.com/honeydew to save 15% on Raycons. Buyraycon.com/honeydew. It's a hectic time of the year. Between weddings, graduations, spring sports, and more, we're busier than ever right now, and sometimes we forget to take a second for ourselves. So this season, take a second to enjoy an ice-cold Coors Light because you deserve a beer that's made to chill, and anytime I want to chill with a beer, it's Coors Light. Doesn't matter if I'm at the club, doesn't matter if I'm at the cookout. If I want to chill and relax with an ice-cold beer, it's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans, they even turn blue when your beer is cold. And that way, you always know when it's time to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. Perfect for a moment to unwind. So remember to take some time for yourself this season. You're out there doing a lot, all right? Have a nice ice cold Coors Light for yourself. When I need to take a second for myself, I'm telling you, I reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/honeydew. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Celebrate responsibly. Now, let's get back to the dew.
So yeah, it's been interesting, but I definitely look at my life half full. You know,
I mean,
I have to, you know,
you're four decades into this business. Yeah, first, sure. You're alive.
Yeah.
This business takes a lot of people, young, quick. Mm. You've known some. Mm. You're still here and you're thriving.
Yeah.
You know,
my penis is thriving. Boom, 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 boom.
I saw you the other night at the store. I know it is.
Boom, boom.
All right. So then after Pauly Shore is dead, do you see... is that a start of another back up to the top again, more of an incline?
I was not looking at the box office. I wasn't looking at the money. I was looking at what was going on here. Mm-hmm. And this was happening. You know, I was doing movies after creating shit from scratch. Like, I can make shit from scratch. I can go into any town in this fucking America and enroll a director, a writer, a camera guy, an editor, a graphics, and make shit from scratch.
Yep.
Like, I moved to Vegas, and the crew that I got out there has never done comedy before. You know, one guy, you know, does football. Mm-hmm. The other guy does DJ stuff. You know what I mean? But I've got them. So I like to make stuff from scratch because it's fucking hard, you know? So I did, after that, I did, what was it? Natural Born Comics, I think, with Charlie Murphy and T-Pain. Did the Ari Shaffir's in it. Ian Edwards is in it. We did that in Miami. Then we did, what else did we do? Adopted, where I go to fucking Africa to adopt a black baby, which I fucking shot in South Africa, which was fucking gnarly. We did that. That was fucking funny, dude. And I just make stuff. So I've done tons of stuff since then. And then Guest House came out 2 years ago, and that did really well for me too. Mm-hmm. So that was a starring role in a film. And I have this other movie that I wrote called Stuck in the Hood, which is me with a bunch of black people. And I think that's a good time for just to do something like that now. You know? Yeah. So you know, but I do pee a lot.
You gotta pee?
Not right now, but
I thought that was a cue.
No. But yeah, so I don't know. You know, I'm lucky, you know. So
you are lucky.
Yeah, yeah. So
Talk to me about some of the close people in this business that you've lost. Like who you mentioned, Gary Garfinkel.
Yeah, Gary Garfinkel. Yeah,
you guys were really close.
Yeah, Gary Garfinkel was one of my big supporters when Hollywood wasn't supporting me. You know,
talk to me about those people.
Yeah,
your real friends.
Yeah. Basically, Gary and I became friends years ago, probably over 20 years ago. He ran the comedy department at Showtime. So he produced a lot of comedy specials, like when Showtime was spitting out a lot of special. That was his department. So we became very friendly. We'd go to the Playboy Mansion together. I got to burp one sec. We would go to the Playboy Mansion together and go to nice dinners at Dantana's and just laugh. He was just silly. And became friends with a lot of his friends. He became friends with a lot of my friends. And he let me stay at his house a lot. Like if I wanted to come over, he lived up the street from my mom. So we would just hang out, you know, and he was just a really sweet guy. And then one afternoon I'm in San Diego. I think I'm with Sandy Danto. He's opening for me. And I think I'm in the parking lot of fucking like Roberto's or some shit. And then Gary gives me a call and he's like, dude, I have something to tell you. You know, he had like this stroke thing, you know, like a stroke. He goes, oh, it's nothing. You know, it's kind of in denial of it. And I'm like, and I started crying. I was like, dude, what? You know, what? Be like you, like all of a sudden getting a call that you got like a lump and you're like, what the fuck is this? And then he got the MRI and then he had like this brain cancer tumor thing. Man. Yeah. So then, you know, close friend. And this happened, you know, and then he died. It was fucked up. And this was, he was 54. Yeah, and he was like a good guy and fucking beloved in the business and all the comics loved him. You know, Jeff Ross knew him. Everyone knew Gary Garfinkel, and he was just a sweetheart. And
and now you're 54. Do you think about things like that?
Yeah, I fucking yeah.
Are you taking care of your health? Like, do you go to the doctor? I don't mean just drink pressed juices and shit. Are you getting
absolutely
looked at?
Yes. Okay. I actually have to have some sort of piss. What's it called? A piss. Thing to
sample?
No, because I pee a lot.
Oh,
yeah. But I don't have an enlarged prostate. It's weird. But my prostate goes like, you know what I mean? It's just what happens when you're 50.
Yeah.
You know, I start peeing a lot. So I just, I got to go get that handled. But other than that, you know, after I found out Gary died of a brain tumor and cancer and all that stuff, I went and had my brain checked. Yeah. And they didn't find anything in there. That's empty. It's just an empty nest. It was like the Tin Man. Hello, hello, hello. Are you in there? Are you in there? Are you in there? Yeah, I had that checked and, you know, thank God, because you don't fucking know, you know? I mean, we all don't make it to 80.
No.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I was like, my dad made it to 92. 92. So
in
I remember.
Comedy, that's like 192.
Yeah. So
it really is. That's.
My dad was funny. I would be like, Dad, let's go outside. He's like, for what? Just leave me the fuck alone. I've seen everything. Don't fucking touch my body.
I'm good. Seen everything.
I'm good. Right? And my mom, she lived to 87. And my sister, she passed at, what was it? I think 63. And she didn't take care of herself, you know? She wasn't healthy. So, yeah, man. You know, and then we all went through this COVID thing. Which was really, I thought, you know, I thought it was fucked, but I also thought it was really good in a way, you know, because now when we walk around, we look at things like this more, you know, all these
appreciate
things.
It more.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's made me look at comedy like that too. Like, if I'm going to leave my kids and get on a plane and go to a city and work a weekend, it's got to be worth it. It's got to be worth it. And if it's not, I'm not going to fucking do it. You know what I mean? I don't know how many more summers I have left. I'm 49. I am in comedy and been in comedy. So who knows?
How long you been in it for?
Since 22 years now. I started at the Comedy Store. Okay. The first time I ever performed was your Belly Room after the first, you know, open mic Belly Room in 99.
Mm. Was Falstaff in charge? Do you remember him?
No.
You don't remember Falstaff?
No. Ooh. I don't remember Falstaff.
He was the best.
Really?
He was this big, big gay guy with like a sailor hat and he would like host a show and like, you know, he was just this big gay dude. And I think he like.
Adam Barnhart ran the show. That was his name.
Yeah,
forever.
Yeah,
Adam, that was the one that I performed on in the belly room on, like, I don't remember.
That's when Fortune worked on that, right? Fortune Feimster.
I think
she said that.
I think so. Yeah, that was a staple, bro.
Yeah, Falstaff was fucking hilarious. But it was all like, for me, it all happened kind of in a year or two. Like my mom, my dad, my sister, Gary, that whole time.
Yeah. Oh, that was all in the
span.
And
that was part of the reason why I moved to Vegas, you know, because I just wanted to get out of LA. I wanted to get away. And then the pandemic, obviously, that had a lot to do with it. So,
is moving to Vegas the first time you've lived anywhere other than Los Angeles? Wow. Never anywhere else. Mm-mm. And what's it like to leave home for you? Do you like it? Do you like being in Vegas?
Yeah, I mean,
or do you
it's
feel
cool.
Like you want to get back?
No, I'm gonna come back. Yeah, I'll come back.
You just back it's just and forth better, right now.
Yeah, I'm back and forth right now. It's just a better lifestyle in California.
Yeah,
Vegas is fucking dry, dude. You know, it's dry during the fucking winter. It's dry during the fucking summer. It's freezing as fuck during the winter, and it's hot as fuck during the summer. And it's a little thrashed out there. I mean, there's only like three really nice places. There's like the Strip, there's Henderson in Summerland, and then everything else looks like fucking, you know, fucked
burned.
Up. Yeah, it's fucked up. Mangy dogs and it's a little thrashed, so that's a little, you know, not fun for me. And then also, to be honest, there's not a lot of people in the entertainment business out there. It's mostly singers and DJs and bottle service people, but there's not like you know, not a lot of editors and production people, not a lot.
Yeah.
But they just don't do that out there. That's not their thing. So I kind of need to be around. I need to be around, you know, people that speak my language. As you could tell, I'm an artist. I got my pink.
I see.
You know what I mean? I got my green glasses I wore for you because I watched your show and I know you like, you like green. This is called the wasabi. This is called the wasabi. Fucking Bobby Lee, man. This fucking guy keeps talking about my dick. I'm going to punch him in his fucking belly. Fucking asshole.
Carson over there laughing.
It's true, dude. He's got to stop talking about it, dude. It's stupid. Him, his brother Stevie's funny, huh?
He is funny.
He's adorable.
Yeah, I want to get him on here. Yeah.
I think him and Tony Rock should go on tour together. I think all the brothers
all
of Community
yeah,
should
yeah.
fucking go
yeah,
on, right? And then my brother Scott can go on tour, right?
yeah,
that'd be fucking
the brothers of tour. Comedy.
Yeah, the brothers of stand-ups tour.
Yeah, the brothers of stand-ups. That's good.
But yeah, I the thing with you in the coughing has got to stop. No, I'm just kidding. No, the thing. Yeah, he's still got COVID left over. It's the residue. No, but the thing. Just my advice to you, as far as touring, you know, and I say this to myself too. You know what? We can.
Yeah.
Meaning we can, number one, we got feet, we got hands, we can carry our bags. There's a lot of people that can't.
It's so
and guess
funny
what's
you say
funny?
That. Go say
guess
it,
what's
finish.
Funny, dude? Like, there's going to be a time when guess what? We can't.
Yes.
So it's like, if you could tour, like fucking tour, not a lot.
No, I go around when
lot.
I don't have my kids.
Yeah,
I
not
do
a
right.
lot. But I just think it's you can do it. And then at the end of the day, it's really not about you. It's about them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like.
That's why I go now. It's unselfish. I'm going out to, I want to meet these people that comment and write all the positivity and the love. You know, I want to go see them live. Plus, it's another skill set. You know, a lot of podcasters can't do an hour. And can't sell tickets.
I definitely can't do an hour, you but know. No, I'm just
but it's funny because I was just talking to my accountants about. They were like, "Hey, I want to talk to you about like you know life insurance and all that." And then there's this disability insurance they were talking about. I go, "Well, just explain that to me." And they're like, "Well, let's just say God forbid something happens and you can't work." This is basically you pay monthly on this for whatever amount of year. I'm like, that's not for life. They're like, nah. And I'm like, man, I got to roll a dice on that because I go, so I made them get on the phone with me. I go, here's how I feel about insurance. If I'm in a wheelchair, I could still podcast. As long as I have my brain and my head, if everything from here up works, I feel like an insurance company could say you can still work.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I could and people do. There are people in wheelchairs that do stand up and shit like that. There are people that do that. So how could I argue that I can't, you know? but I passed on that insurance. Help, pray for me, y'all. But you're right. We can. We're healthy enough. I go to the doctor twice a year. I don't go once. Everyone in my family has died. Mm. So I'm on that shit. Mm. I'm every
from
six.
From what?
Well, it was always heart disease. Mm. But I found out now this actually years later that my father most likely instead of a heart, it was a heart attack he had, but it was a clot that killed him. Not the actual
like
heart
attack. Like that AD-DO commercial.
What's that one? I haven't seen
it. You know, where the gets clogged in the drain and they pour the AD-DO and then it declogs. Remember? Yeah, AD-DO.
That shit. Yeah.
Remember? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what killed
the Drano shit. It was clogged.
Drano, yes, it was
you need
clogged.
To declog that shit.
Yeah. So years later, and he was 42, and this was 89. So the doctors now say, look, man, if you died that young back then, most people just ruled it a heart attack. And we're learning more and more these days wow. that most likely a lot of those could have been clots and things like that that weren't just a heart attack. So I'm in there. I know I have a blood disease, which is I'm prone to clotting called factor V Leiden. So I'm always making sure.
Are you
going
to be giving
months.
It to me? Jesus Christ. What the no. fuck? Help, no. help. It's giving me a blood disease.
So I'm on that shit, dude. I'm on it.
I got ear shit.
Twice a year. What do you mean?
Ear. I have a superior something blah, blah, blah dysfunction where I have a, my ears are always full.
Does it fuck with your balance and stuff?
No.
No? But no. your hearing?
My hearing's perfect.
So you just have to get them drained?
No, there's just like a small clog.
And how do you get it out?
I don't.
Well, so eventually we'll be deaf?
No. It's an ear disease. I'm going to give it to you. You give me your blood disease and I'll give you my fucking ear disease and we can mix that shit up.
Let's do it, dude.
Right?
Let's
Yo, bro, baby wheeze, Chinese face. Right? Where is that guy? If Bobby Lee was here, we would tie him up, bro.
Bobby Lee.
We'd tie him up and smack him.
Yeah, I would love to smack Bobby Lee around a little bit. I think he'd like it, though, you know.
That's true.
He'd definitely be into it. All right, talk to me about, I want to talk to you about your mom.
Can I pee really quick?
Yeah, yeah. We can pause it right here. You can go pee. I'd love to talk about your mom because I'm officially passed at the Comedy Store now, which is an honor. And
yeah, she told me. He's gonna get a stickler. He's so funny, Mom. Mom, there's no room for him on the fucking wall. Figure it out.
Figure it out. But no, Emily LaFord, which I love that the, I love, first of all, I love Emily LaFord, who also books this show. Mm. And she's the one that put me in the system. And, you know, I had to do the work and she passed me. So I love the fact she and I go back forever. I love the fact that after your mom, it's her for me.
Okay.
And I love that a woman is running the Comedy Store again. It's
She's trying to channel my mom. Yeah.
But I mean, there's not been a female booker since your mom, right?
I don't think so.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's back in a lady's hands. It's interesting. And I see her work in the sets. I mean, I don't always go in the same spot. You know, I see her making me go last or next to last, early, middle, because that's all different, you know, different crowds, different right. rooms and shit.
Well, she's got epilepsy, though.
Who?
Emily. So she doesn't know where you're going to go. She's like, fuck it, put him here. What? No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, I don't know. I'm about to check in on her.
No, I was just kidding.
Talk to me about your mom and the whole legacy. I mean, I want to say your mom is the king of comedy. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. What person has put more people in front of a microphone that have gone on to do what these people have done?
She loved her comedians.
But she also knew brilliant comedy. And also, I'm sorry to interrupt, but some people like comedy and they just like this one. I like clean comedy. I only like this comedy. I like this comedy. Your mom loved every range of it from, I mean, God, think about it, Paul Rodriguez and Carlin and Pryor and Kinison and Dice and all these guys are so fucking different.
Tamayo Tsuki.
So talk to me about it. Like you're seeing every kind of comedy growing up. And your mom, I know she loved them, but she also had that eye.
Yeah, well, it started with my father. You know, she'd give him pointers, and then she got the store, and then she started giving other comedians pointers.
Did she ever do comedy? Did she ever perform? Never. Not
she
even
didn't like
younger
to be on
anything.
Camera, no.
What got her into comedy?
My father.
Really?
Yeah.
Just seeing him perform? Is
Well, they met at a place called Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. So my dad was performing there. My dad was the original.
Okay.
Yeah, you know that, right?
Yes.
He's like the original dude. Like, yep. He was on tour. You know, like, we're on tour. He was on tour in the 50s playing fucking, you know, strip clubs, bars, camps, wherever he could get stage time. So he was just there. He came across a gig called Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin, which was a camp. And my mom worked for the boss at the camp. And then my mom would watch my father, and she would type up his jokes.
Just on her own?
Yeah. But they were fucking.
Right, but she's not telling him she's doing this, or is she?
Yeah.
Oh, they started working together.
Yeah, she, okay. Hey, do this, Sammy. Try this one. This was good. You doing? That's not funny. Try, you know, she would just kind of like, you know, help him out, you know what I mean, and mm-hmm. support him. And, you know, and he was very nervous around her because he kind of knew that she was right, you know. And that was her natural instinct to help and guide, you know, him. So then when she got to the store and they started that, it kind of, and he was off in Vegas, you know, working with Elvis and touring and doing his whole thing. She naturally kind of took over the store because she, you know, and then the boom hit. Mm-hmm. So it was also the right place at the right time, right club, you know, but it was his club. And then she ran it after that.
Right.
But she was just, you know, again, I've said this before. It's kind of like Justin Bieber on the steps of in Toronto, wherever he got discovered. You know, he's just playing the guitar and then Usher sees him, right? I mean, that's kind of how that happened. So, you know, she was at the store and Letterman showed up and Robin showed up and all these different guys showed up and it was her club and she loved her comics and she just was more into them than her kids. You know, and yeah, she just enjoyed it. You know, it was a natural thing to her. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think she got sick is because of the business part of it. You know what I mean? Was she didn't like that part of it because she wanted to be an artist and helping, you know, helping comedians. So, you know, it's hard to be both. Yeah.
Who were your favorites to see live when you were a kid? Like you're floating in and out of there from four to now. Who was like?
Well, Eddie Murphy was pretty much one of the best.
You got to see him perform.
Oh, I mean, back in the 80s. Store. Yeah, back in the 80s.
I'm
dying
to see him come back in there again. Yeah. He's about to go on tour. He's got to come back in there. They said he had a tour book before the pandemic, and he's doing shit for Netflix. I hope he comes through.
Yeah. So him, and then obviously, you know, Cheech and Chong, George Carlin.
Yeah,
I saw the whole George Carlin run at the end before he passed. He was working out there a lot, you know, in the main room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty cool because he's like a scientist, you know, and he wasn't even that funny. It was like fucking brilliant. But then you'd laugh. You'd be kind of watching like, you know, I think he had more comedy specials than any comic. I think he had 14 HBO specials.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was 14. I know he was considered the most prolific writer in our art form.
Yes.
And he released a special maybe every 3 years. Now they're turning it so quick. I feel like that's what has watered down a lot of the stand-up I see these days.
Well,
it's
so
just fast.
There's not as many good comedians. That's all.
But I feel like some of the comedy could be better if you worked on it another year or two. You know what I mean? Like, and really put that time in and not just saying the same shit every night, but fucking with the words here and there. Like you say, a scientist moving this and around and changing a and a the and shit like that. It's a big deal, you know.
And then there was guys like Lenny Schultz, who is one of my favorite comedians, and he was just insane. Do you know about Lenny Schultz? Lenny Schultz was, he was a PE coach from Catskills, upstate New York. And he used to be insane. He was insane. He was like crazier than Gallagher. Remember when Gallagher
was,
and I was a kid.
Yeah.
So as a kid, I liked that shit. So he was like this Jewish guy. He had a beautiful body. And he'd do all this weird. He had a lot of props, but nuts. It wasn't like prop comedy. It was just like this guy was fucking out of his mind. And he used to, you know, juggle fish in the bowl. He would throw spaghetti in his face. And then he did this thing called the Lenny Schultz diet. And then after every show, he would, this would be his closer. So he would basically take off all his clothes to his Speedos. And he would say something like, a lot of people do diets and they put the food in their mouth. But on the Lenny Schultz diet, I put the food on the body parts where you want to lose weight. So he'd put like chocolate pudding here, cottage cheese in his balls, pour milk on his head. You know what I mean? And people are like, what the fuck? And then I would clean him up in the back, you know, where we all hang out over there. So I'd hose him down and clean him up. So he was one of my favorites. And then there was Dave Tyree was fucking funny. Ollie Joe Prater was funny. Jack Perdue was funny. You know, you had Jim Carrey when he first came out. I was so happy for him. It was such a it was interesting because Jim Carrey, you know, people see people just make it. They don't see all this shit before. And before he made it, he did all these movies and parts where it just didn't work. You know, I remember he did this movie called Once Bitten.
Remember
that? And it was just like, I don't want to say
that vampire shit.
Yeah, it was just like, it just didn't work. And then I think his first one was Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
And that was the big one. And I was so proud of him, you know, when he came out. And he was kind of like, I don't want to say he surpassed Robin Williams, but at the time he was like the new Robin Williams. I mean, he was getting $20 million a movie and he was, you know, on a roll, dude. Mm-hmm. You know, on a roll, like blockbuster. I mean, these movies were making $100 million a fucking pop.
Yeah.
And that was like huge. So he was great to watch. And then for sure, Dice was great to watch.
I mean, look,
Arsenio, watching Arsenio go from fucking, you know, from there to having, he had the hottest fucking talk show.
No doubt.
Hottest talk show.
Bill Clinton came on, played the saxophone.
I was on his show a lot on Arsenio. It was really cool for me to do all these talk shows like Letterman and Leno Arsenio.
Yeah.
Because all these guys babysat me and they watched me and I'm sitting across from Letterman. I'm totally fucking with him. You know, if you look at old Letterman's with me, it's really funny because he gets uncomfortable because I'm like, dude, you're on the Comedy Store basketball team. Stop fucking with me. You know, shit like that. Yeah, it was great. But he was fantastic. And that's why I thought Binder did such a good job on the doc because he was there. You know, Binder was physically there. So he got the trust from all the comics, you know, and you know, Andy did a good job. He's a good director. So I was happy that, you know, that he was the one that did that.
All right. So you got Pinocchio going on now.
I got the one man show. I'll be at the Dynasty Typewriter. It's on my website. And I'm going to Brooklyn. I'm doing some shows in Brooklyn with it. And Mike Binder's directing it. And then also a company called Radical Media is producing it. So we're going to try to sell it.
Tell me more about the, like, what are you,
it's cool.
What are you diving into?
Just fun.
In the one man show.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, can you give me a story?
I did them all today.
This is the fun stuff. Yeah.
I did them all today. I talk about my dad opening for Elvis. I talk about my mom partying with Richard Pryor and Robin Williams. I talk about my sister dating Filthy McNasty.
When you say you talk about your mom partying with Richard Pryor and Robin Williams, you're seeing that, but you're around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's scenes, you know, because again, I wouldn't do the fucking show if I didn't think it was interesting. Or
I want to hear all this shit. Yeah.
I wouldn't do it if I didn't think people thought that I thought that people would think it was interesting.
What do you remember about?
There's a lot of fucking work that goes into this.
Tell me something about Richard Pryor, because to me, that's my. I mean, look, I say this all the time. I think Richard's the greatest. However, recently, I believe it was Tom Segura's tour manager, Dave, who told me that Eddie Murphy had a tour. Of arenas before the pandemic hit. Now, I don't question the validity of that at all, but if you haven't done stand-up in decades and you're going immediately into arenas, I got to say that there's no question who the GOAT would be at that point.
Yeah.
That's beyond crazy.
Yeah, but no, Richard's the original. I mean, he's the best, you know. And if you ask me why, I mean, it's just his vulnerability. You know, his likability.
What do you remember about personal moments with him?
He was just gentle.
Was he a good guy?
Yeah, he was gentle and he was quiet. Yeah.
He was quiet. Huh?
Yeah. Like he would always kind of, you know, sit in the back. I would always go get him a drink. You know, he'd come in, you know, and I would shake his hand and follow me. And then I'd go tell my mom Richard's here and then she'd go see him. Those are those photos. Yeah. Sometimes you see him together because, you know, I was the one that like, you know, that was the owner's son. So, you know, I wanted to make sure Richard felt good. He'd have a cigarette. And then, you know, and then I would fucking, I would, the MC would be like, who's next? And then I'd like run up there and I'd fucking, you know, give him the piece of paper, right? And then, you know, the second you say the word Richard Pryor, you know, everyone fucking, it was, you know, it was like people just had a heart attack. It was crazy. And then he showed up and you're like, oh, fuck, that's him. And then towards the end of his life, he came up a lot, you know, in his wheelchair, which was cool. And, you know, so, you know, he got multiple sclerosis. I had him on my MTV show, which was dope.
You did get that one?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I fucking sat down. This was right before he started to kind of like sway, you know? So that was really cool. And he laughed, you know, and it was right at the beginning of the Weeze shit.
I remember, he never lost his mind. I remember seeing an award ceremony where, I can't remember who it was, they gave him an award and he could no longer clap and his daughter took his like sleeve and she just raised it up so he could wave and acknowledge the crowd and stuff. But then when he got out there, he's in his wheelchair, they give him this award and as they hand it to him, it falls a little bit and he sets it in his lap and the first thing he says is, I'd like to thank y'all for giving me this heavy ass award. And I start laughing right away. Because it's his body that's failing him. It was never, at least at that point, it was not his mind. It was still there. His sense of humor seemed to still be there and all that shit, you know.
Yeah, it was, you know, he hit it pretty hard. You know, he was, you know, he was rocking and rolling, you know. So.
Well, dude, thank you very much for coming on here and talking about this stuff today.
Cool. All good.
Promote everything again, please.
Oh yeah, so just on my social media, just Pauly Shore, YouTube Pauly Shore, my band The Crusties. That's really fun. I like that. That's fucking stupid. And then all the voiceover stuff that's out, and then the one man show is everywhere. I'll be in New York, and then I'll be here in LA.
And before I forget, I'm going to ask you because I forgot to ask you before you plug there. Advice you would give to 16-year-old Pauly Shore now after the things we've talked about today and. What would you say?
Well, I would probably say, you know, before you make certain decisions, maybe think more with your head and not your heart.
You know? Great advice. It is. Sometimes you got your mom's heart. Yeah.
And sometimes you make, because you know the truth. You know the truth, but sometimes it's not about the truth. Sometimes it's about, you know, some other shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, but it is what it is, you know? Like you said, I'm alive. We're alive. People watching, we're alive. We've all been through a crazy ass fucking time. Fucking, my hearts go out to all the people in Ukraine right now. I'm watching that shit.
Yeah.
People are like, what do you do at night? I'm like, I watch the news. And the reason why I watch the news is because I got a big heart. I don't watch the news to you know, because my heart is hurting for those people. It's fucking terrible. What's going on over there? I've never seen anything like that before. And guess what? We're from there. Those are our ancestors. My grandparents were from Kiev.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, those are all our people, you know, and what he's doing there is just fucking just, it's, you know, I'm dying. So every night I'm
videos,
watching.
Tanks coming down. Every night. Could you imagine that shit? Like, fuck, that's a city in the world right now.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, my hearts go out to those, and Sean Penn's out there right now making a documentary. So, we'll see.
Sean Penn has done so much. Listen, man, we all got vaccinations at Dodger Stadium because of Sean Penn. You know that, right?
No, I don't.
That's all him, man. And so when we were out in line, we're getting Evan and I are in the car. We're getting our first shot, and they line you up in Dodger Stadium, and this lady's talking to us, just worker there. And, you know, you're sitting in your car and you wait about 15 minutes. They give you this, you know, boom in the arm. Then they make you sit there. So no one. And Sean Penn just walking a lot. Little tiny ass Sean Penn. She's helping like, he did this. Because the thing was, the vaccination at the time was available. But they were saying, we don't know how to get it to everybody. And Sean Penn set up this whole fucking thing.
Wow.
I can't remember the name of his company. And I want to, is it Core or C-O-R-E or something like that. But anyway, he set it all up. And we were all able to go get these shots because one dude gave a fuck enough and was like, well, let's just do this, you know, and politicians aren't doing shit like that.
Yeah.
So, good for Sean Penn.
Yeah. He's, I mean, not only a great actor, he's a great dude.
He's done a lot.
Yeah. And he cares. He's got a big heart. You know, and that's really what it's about.
That's it.
Is caring for yep. people and helping people. Yeah. So I like helping comics too. That makes me feel good. It makes me feel good to see, you know, Josh Martin, you know, killing now, you know, Jesus, Sandy, yeah. all of them, mm-hmm. you know, all these guys opened for me for years, you know, and before when they were open for me, I don't want to say they were terrible, but they were pretty fucking, you know what I mean? And you put them out there in that audience and they've gotten good.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I like to help people.
It's well, cool. Thank you for doing this today, bro.
All right, bro.
Thank you.
We'll see you in the lot.
Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow. All right. Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next week.